all across America and around the world. This is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
Welcome to Veterans Radio. I am Jim Fossone. I'm the officer of the deck today. We've got some great programs for you. I think you'll find very interesting. We always want to remind you, you can find more about Veterans Radio at its Facebook site or at the web. VeteransRadio.org is our new URL, VeteransRadio.org, where we're on the web 24/7. You can find a lot of our podcasts there as well. We post new ones every Tuesday, so you can get a new story, a new interview, something you didn't know before by going to VeteransRadio.org. And before we get started, we want to thank our sponsors. First up, we want to thank National Veteran Business Development Council, NVBDC.org. It was established to certify both service-disabled and veteran-owned businesses. You'll find out how they can help your business by going to NVBDC.org. We want to thank Legal Help for Veterans. Legal Help for Veterans fights for veterans' disability rights all across the nation. You can reach them at 800-693-4800 or on the web at LegalHelpForVeterans.com. We want to welcome to Veterans Radio today Colonel Jason Fettig of the Marine Corps, retired. Colonel, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Jim, thanks so much for having me on.
Well, this is a really unique opportunity to tell some stories that I think people probably have never heard about. Colonel Fettig was the 28th director of the President's Own United States Marine Band. That's quite a high honor and must have been really the pinnacle of your career, Colonel.
Oh, absolutely. And honestly, a complete surprise. You know, this job of director of the Marine Band is the same job that John Philip Sousa once held. He was the 17th director of the band in the 1880s. And when I joined the service to join the President's Own, I could have never imagined that someday they'd give me the honor of leading this distinguished unit.
Well, let's kind of start at the beginning. How did a nice New England kid from like you from New Hampshire end up in the Marine Corps?
I would say completely by accident. You know, my grandfather served in World War II, so we had a little bit of service in the family, but not a whole lot. I was training to be a music educator, actually, at the University of Massachusetts, I should say. And my idea was to be a band director, you know, so I was about to get my degree and I was traveling on a little bit of a tour over a summer, kind of an internship with a group called the American Wind Symphony. And I saw an advertisement for the Marine Band. They had an opening for clarinet. And the way that the President's Own finds its Marines is we audition like civilian orchestras because we are trying to find musicians who are fully trained out of the gate and educated to jump right in and start doing their job on behalf of the President and the Marine Corps. And so the auditions often have civilians who will come to audition. And if they win the audition and they are qualified to enlist in the Marine Corps and healthy enough and can get a security clearance, they enlist for service in the Marine Band. And they stay there for their entire careers, which, of course, as you know, is very unusual in the service and certainly in the Marine Corps. So I decided to take a chance and take this audition. I was 21 years old. I didn't know much about the Marine Corps. I certainly had heard of the President's Own, but I thought I was completely unqualified. You know, I imagined just the musicians that are in the band being so good, and I'm just a college student. Came down to Washington, took the audition, was shocked at the end of that audition that I won the job. And they offered me a position with the band, and that set me on a path that would eventually lead to becoming the director, which is unfathomable to me.
Yeah, when you look back on it, you say, wait a minute, a chance seeing of a posting resulted in an incredible career. Now, you have two bachelor's degrees from the University of Massachusetts at Amherst, and you also have a master's degree in orchestral conducting from the University of Maryland at College Park.
That's correct.
This was not all planned out, right? This is just taking opportunities that presented themselves.
Yeah, and you can imagine for a young musician student, you know, the prospect of joining the Marines, even though we have a very specialized mission in the Marine Corps, a very important mission, but very unique. A lot of people don't know about music in the service and exactly what goes into it and who these service members are. It was nerve-wracking to think I'm going to join the Marine Corps and I'm going to be expected to uphold those traditions and that discipline as well as be a musician. But when I joined, you know, thinking maybe I'll do my one enlistment, my 4 years, and then I'll go back to school or I'll start teaching. Within a couple of months, I realized just how incredibly special this opportunity was. And I had put on hold at that point my aspirations to conduct and to lead because I didn't think that that was going to be an opportunity, that it would just be playing clarinet and doing what I had gone to school to do. And then 3.5 years into my enlistment, I was going to reenlist, was going to continue to serve in the band. I was very happy. They had an opportunity to audition again to become one of the junior assistant directors, one of the conductors, and to be commissioned. And I took that audition also with no expectations. And when I won that audition, it set me on the path as an officer and as a conductor that eventually would lead to my appointment as a director in 2014. But the whole thing was completely unplanned. If you had talked to me when, or anybody, when you were a teenager and say, hey, what would you like to do? And you say, you know what, I'd like to be the director of the President's Zone. I'd like to be music advisor to the White House and have the same job that John Philip Sousa once had. How about that? You people would have laughed in your face. There's no way to plan that kind of opportunity. So you just go where the opportunities lead and you just hope that you're the most qualified person at that time. And was so fortunate that that's how it worked out in my, that chapter of my career.
Well, that's really one of the pearls of wisdom we get out of these interviews is for people to realize you have to prepare yourself and take the opportunity when it shows up. These are two opportunities that you had prepared for, and you said, I'm going to raise my hand and give it a try. But I have to imagine that when you went home and said to the folks in New Hampshire, hey, I'm going to join the Marine Corps, there may have been some raised eyebrows.
A little bit. You know, I think if you had known me when I was growing up, kind of a class clown, little jokester, sarcastic, that probably being a United States Marine was probably low on the list of what people thought I might do. And certainly a colonel in the United States Marine Corps would have been a shock to some of the people who knew me. They knew music was very important in my life and that I would be dedicated to wherever that service called me. But the Marines is very special. But I'll tell you, Jim, as you probably with so many of your guests, you know, in your own family service, that the service changes you. And within a very short amount of time, when I became a Marine, I was changed. And that change fundamentally defined who I'd become as a professional, who I'd become as a musician. And I feel that to this day. I'm a retiree now and I'm teaching, but I still feel that influence on my life, both in music and beyond music every day. And I'm so grateful that I ended up in a place that I never would have imagined that I would have gone. You know, sometimes you end up where you're supposed to be. And I think the Marine Corps was where I was supposed to be. And it really resonated deeply with me. And I'm glad that I took that chance those years ago, because I do shudder to think what would have happened if I decided that I didn't have the courage to put myself out there and would have ended up in a very different place than I am now.
Now, Colonel, there are a lot of listeners right now who have been through basic training themselves in the different services, and they are asking themselves, do the military musicians go to a basic training camp?
And the answer is yes and no. So the vast majority of military musicians in all the services do attend recruit training. That's different in every service, of course, different locations, different length of time. Almost every Marine does go through basic training. I will tell you that the members of the President's Own have been exempted from basic training since the 1950s. And the reason for that is that the expectation of Marine musicians at the level of the President's Own, which are the music, the house band for the White House, have an incredibly diverse portfolio of expectations on behalf of our nation, on behalf of the Marine Corps. The expectation is that they'd have the education and the experience to do that job in that very specialized environment right out of the gate. And so without risk of injury, without being off of the instrument for 14, 16 weeks, that exemption was made in the 50s and it's held true. So what we do is we bring our new Marines enlisted to Washington, D.C., and we try to indoctrinate them in all of the training that happens in basic training, save for the weapons training and some of the physical rigors. So all of the history, customs, traditions, UCMJ, Everything that is important about the culture of the Marine Corps, the respect for the history, for the traditions of the Marine Corps is taught over about an 8-week period. And that is when people are preparing to make that transition before they then start playing full time with the band. It is a little bit of a point of contention, as you might imagine, with some of my colleagues in the Marine Corps. A lot of Marines who don't have a chance to meet musicians of the present zone, they're sometimes suspicious of how could we have Marines that don't go through that very important gauntlet, that very important rite of passage. But as soon as they meet our Marines and see how dedicated they are to telling the Marine Corps story, to being out there and representing all of our brothers and sisters who are doing the hardest work of the Corps, they change their minds. I mean, time and time again, as I spoke to my brothers and sisters, and they had a chance to really understand what the band is all about, what music plays for a role in our Marine Corps and our country, they become transformed as well. And I've loved having those relationships with those Marines and having those conversations. It's been very important.
Well, Colonel, I've had the chance to listen to a number of the service bands and choral groups and singing groups. It's always inspiring when they're out in the community talking and performing to with folks. If I understand it right, do all of the services have musicians in them on these kind of engagements?
Yeah, every service has musicians. So different sizes of the programs. The Coast Guard, for instance, has one band that is stationed in New London, Connecticut at the Academy. They're a smaller service, a Department of Homeland Security, so that's the only band. All the other services have about anywhere from 8 to 20 bands stationed around the country and in some cases around the world. In the case of the Marine Corps, we have 12 total bands, 10 fleet bands that are stationed on the coasts where the Marine Corps is, also one in Japan, in Okinawa, and one in Hawaii. And then there's the Marine Band in Washington. We also have the Marine Drum and Bugle Corps, which is the only drum and bugle corps in the entire armed services. So they're a very historic and very special unit. And those are the two ensembles that if you go to the Friday evening parades at Marine Barracks Washington in the summers, you'll see both the President's Own and the Commandant's Own Marine Drum and Bugle Corps performing together during that ceremony, which is very impressive to see that level of musicianship illuminating that ceremony.
Well, Colonel Fedek knew right where I was going with this question because he and I talked about 8th and I in D.C., where the Marines are. And if you ever get a chance to go to the Friday night silent tattoo under the lights, it's a impressive, moving affair every time. And I suspect for the men and women in the band, it's equally moving and prideful. But you've been there. You've walked the ground. Tell us about it.
It's a sacred place. You know, Marine Barracks Washington, we call it the oldest post of the Corps. It was the first official post of the Marine Corps in Washington, D.C. It was founded by Thomas Jefferson, of all people, and William Ward Burroughs, who was the commandant at the time. They picked out this piece of land within marching distance of the Capitol and the White House so that the Marines that were stationed there could defend our nation and our national capital if it came to that. And of course, it did come to that in the War of 1812. It's a very special place, and it's special historically. It's a special sacred place to Marines all over the world. And it's also special because it is our primary connection to the American public. You know, what music does in the military is it connects our service members, our men and women in uniform, to the public, to our government officials, to our president, in a very emotional and visceral way. So when we march on Friday evening parades and we have 3,000 or 4,000 people come every week, everyday citizens, sometimes veterans, of course, since active duty service members, but the majority of the audience are people that have no affiliation with the service. And they see Marines performing with such precision and such dignity and such excellence, and they hear that music that stirs the soul and in perfect cadence with what's happening with our Marines on the deck. It's a very, very special and emotional experience. And people leave that parade having a greater admiration for those who serve, a greater respect and desire to support those who wear the uniform and who represent our country in that special way. It's the same spirit that happens all over the country. You asked about, bands traveling to other communities, not only in Washington, D.C., but all the bands have units, including the President's Own, that go out on tour and share a piece of what happens in Washington and in our government with communities all over the country, you know, playing in major venues like Carnegie Hall and the next day playing in a middle school gymnasium in New Jersey or a field house in Nebraska. And, you know, thousands of people will come to these concerts and gather together in community with no political overtones, with nothing other than the expectation of being together as Americans and listening to this great music and these great bands that we're so proud of. And frankly, just feeling good about our country and about what we represent. And music is the most powerful tool to do that, which is why music has been a part of the services since its inception. The Marine Corps has had music almost since its birth, and it's been one of the most important things to preserving and illuminating that culture. And I can speak obviously firsthand about that. I was deeply engaged in that for 26 years.
Well, one of the things that we could spend a whole nother show on is the history of music in the military from all around the nations, all nations involved. But one of the things that you got to do directing the President's Own is sort of do those goodwill ambassador tours, not just out of the White House, but internationally, if I understand it.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't travel too much internationally, and most of that is because we are needed at the White House. And so over 300 commitments a year for the President of the United States with the Marine Band, over 1,000 commitments a year total for the Marine Corps, whether that's playing for full honors funerals at Arlington National Cemetery, which is one of the most important things we do, Marine Corps ceremonies, tours, concerts, all of that happens in D.C. But every once in a while, we get internationally. And to bring the Marine Band, in my case, when I was director, I took the band on two international tours, one to Japan, of course, great allies of the United States and of the Marine Corps, big Marine Corps presence in Japan since World War II. That was an incredible tour to bring this famous ensemble to the Japanese people, to have cultural exchanges with their armed forces bands. Very, very special to building those bridges and preserving those allyships that are so important to our country. And then just last summer, before I retired, I took the band to Europe and we played concerts in Prague and Austria and the Netherlands to standing room only crowds. And it's just such a privilege knowing how important music is in the American military culture to bring these ensembles abroad and to show that and show how that represents the excellence in our armed services all across all of the services. Really very, very special feelings and indelible memories that I will never forget.
Well, you also had the chance to put some of this music down on wax, as they used to say, but I'm sure it's digitally recorded now. Tell us about recording sessions with the President's Own.
Yeah, I'll tell you a funny little story is John Philip Sousa was the director from 1880 to 1892. He left a little bit before the recording industry really kind of caught hold. And Sousa himself was a bit skeptical of recordings because he felt like live
performance. One of those new fad things that'll never take off, right?
Yeah, I think that's exactly how he felt. And he wasn't wrong in the sense that live performance is still the best. Getting out to the people, having live musicians interact with live audiences is the bread and butter of music performance. But as we all know, you know, recordings are so important to sharing this art across the entire globe. And so recordings has been a huge part of the Marine Band's legacy, putting historic repertoire down onto disc that we can share. Wax cylinder originally, then records, then, you know, 8 tracks and cassettes and now CDs and now digital. And we do a lot of recording in the Marine Band, not only for sharing for educational purposes, for bands all over the world to use this great professional ensemble as a model for how to play core music that's important to all of us, but also to help preserve the legacy of historic music. So, for instance, in the Marine Band, we did an entire complete collection of the marches of John Philip Sousa, new recordings, 125 marches that we recorded over 7 years during my directorship to share with music lovers and share with the schools all over the world so they could gather an appreciation for a lot of this music that is so central to our American artistic identity. And a lot of music that people don't know by the great John Philip Sousa, one of our great composers in America. And we also made all of the music available in sheet music form so that schools could download for free the marches of John Philip Sousa, hear the Marine Band perform them, and then perform them themselves off of the same parts. So this was a great example of the band being a resource to to citizens. You know, we are paid for by the taxpayer dollar. We consider it a huge part of our mission to provide inspiration, provide educational resources, provide a model for people who are aspiring to be musicians or simply people who love band music and look to the President's Own as the pinnacle of that.
Well, Colonel, you had an incredible military career that we could talk on for quite a while, but I wanted to spend a few minutes at least because you are now wearing the mantle of Professor of Music and Director of Bands at the University of Michigan. How did a nice colonel like you get talked into that job?
A nice colonel like me, Jim. I've talked to some of my Marines. I don't know if they'd agree with you. Well, here's the situation. I told you earlier in our talk that I wanted to be a band director. And my career as a teacher got, I like to joke, I got a little sidetracked by me winning a position with the President's Own. And it turned out to be a beautiful opportunity for me. But I always knew when I was finished with the Marines, and I was young enough when I got in that I knew I didn't want to overstay my welcome. You know, people who are in command, you have the privilege of command. You're really in control of so many aspects of your colleague's life, those under your command. And I felt it was important for me to pass that baton at a time when I felt like someone else could continue to take the unit in a place where it deserved to go. So I knew I'd always return to teaching. I just didn't know where it was going to be. When the opportunity came up to apply to the University of Michigan, it was almost like a dream come true because Michigan, I've always for decades had such respect for this school of music, for the students who come out of it, for the culture of the university, the tradition of the university, which of course is so important to me, coming from the Marine Corps. So I applied, and without any expectation that I would be the best candidate, I went through the process, and it turns out I was. And if you had asked me a decade ago if I could go anywhere after my career in the Marine Corps, where would I want to go to teach music, I would have told you the University of Michigan for all the reasons I just said. So for me to land here as my second job in my entire professional career is unfathomable to me, but I am so grateful to have been a part of this and to get involved in what happens here at Michigan. It is an exceptional institution, and I'm having such a great time taking my experiences from my professional career and sharing them with my students.
Well, let's do one more thing before we run out of time, and I want to build on the concept of passing the baton. Because those of us in the military, we've all been at change of command ceremonies, and you just recently retired, and there was a change of command for the President's Own. Talk to us about your change of command ceremony, because you passed the baton literally.
We did, yeah. And you know, the change of command, as you well know, and all of our listeners who have served, is such a sacred tradition. It is our version of the inauguration, right? It's our chance to have the peaceful transfer of power for any military unit. In the Marine Band, we take the change of command incredibly seriously because there is only one director of the Marine Band, and we wear a very special uniform. We know that the uniform of the President's Own is unique. It's the red with blue trim, you know, the opposite of a Marine uniform, because musicians wore the opposite colors of battle Marines because we needed to be found on the battlefield quickly to signal to the troops. So the Marine Band uniform is red with braiding and gold buttons, 21 buttons, and a beautiful aiguillette and epaulette signifying our presidential service. The director of the Marine Band wears a solid blue black coat, just like Marines, but with the same decoration. There's only one of them in the entire Marine Corps, because there's only one limited duty officer colonel in the entire Marine Corps, and that is the director of the Marine Band. So there's only one time, Jim, when two individuals are wearing that black coat, and that is when we do our change of command. So we decided that this year, since I was leaving in December rather than in the summer, which is traditional, that we would take the change of command to this huge gathering of music lovers and educators. The largest gathering in the country happens in Chicago every year in December. It's called the Midwest Band and Orchestra Clinic. We wanted to show these music lovers, these teachers, this sacred ceremony. And so in front of about 5,000 people, we stopped the concert in the middle, and we both came out on stage with the Commandant of the Marine Corps, Assistant Commandant of the Marine Corps at the time, thanks. And we did the change of command ceremony in front of these folks. And we literally passed the baton, as you said. There is a baton that was given to John Philip Sousa in 1892 when he left the Marine Band by the men of the band in their esteem for him. It's this ceremonial baton with a beautiful eagle, globe, and anchor on the top, and it's inscribed to Sousa. It lives in a hermetically sealed case all the time because it's a priceless artifact. And we pull it out once every decade or so for our changes of command. And I passed that baton to my successor, Lieutenant Colonel Ryan Allen. And then I left the stage in Chicago in front of all those educators. And I took off my blouse. And that was the last time that I'll ever wear that historic uniform.
Well, it's an amazing career that you've had, experiences that, again, most people can't even fathom. You got on this road kind of accidentally and enjoyed it immensely, and we are so happy you could share this so that kids out there, men and women who are in the musical field and didn't even know you could have a musical career in the military can maybe get a little glimpse at this. And certainly we would encourage anybody listening to any time any of the military bands of one form or shape or another come into town, go listen. You will be amazed. Colonel Fettig, we really appreciate the time that you've given to us and the insights that you shared.
It's been wonderful to talk to you, Jim, and to all the Marines out there, Semper Fidelis, and to all of my new University of Michigan colleagues, go blue.
And I want to thank everybody for listening to Veterans Radio today. I am Jim Fossone. It's been a pleasure to be your host. I'm a veterans disability lawyer at Legal Help for Veterans, and you can reach us at 800-693-4800 or legalhelpforveterans.com on the web. You can follow Veterans Radio on Facebook and listen to its podcasts and internet radio shows
by visiting us at veteransradio.org. That's veteransradio.org.
And until next time, you are dismissed.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
We again want to thank our national sponsors, the National Veterans Business Development Council, NVBDC.org, VA Ann Arbor Health Care System, the Vietnam Veterans of America Charles S. Kettles Chapter, Ann Arbor, Michigan, VFW Graf O'Hara Post 423 in Ann Arbor, and the American Legion Press Corps Post 46, also in Ann Arbor. We appreciate all your support. You can go to veteransradio.net, click on the sponsor level, and continue to support keeping Veterans Radio on the air. And until next time, you are dismissed.